So hello and welcome to the second ever edition of PI in a Pod, the podcast where we talk about the biggest pensions issues of the week, delve behind the headlines and work out what really should matter to you. I'm joined today by Jack Jones, editor of Pensions Insight and Engaged Investor.
Hello.
And Jenna Gaddavi, Insight Editor of Pensions Insight and Engaged Investor.
Hello.
And I, of course, am Sarah Benwell, the digital editor of Engaged Investor and Pensions Insight, and also the host of this podcast. Last week, we talked about Brexit, very timely, just one week before the referendum. And this week, we are going to be discussing the thorny issue of BHS, possibly the biggest pension scandal to hit our headlines in over 20 years. Now, the way I see, the reason I'm calling it a scandal, I think, is because, you know, in terms of newspaper coverage, BHS has all the makings of a great story. It's got death threats, it's got investigations, it's got possible fraud, it's got all sorts of things. But at the heart of this issue, I think, there's a real pensions story, and that really should be where we should be focusing our efforts, because it is, you know, the members of the pension scheme who are going to be most impacted by this. So I think I'm going to come to Jack first and just say to you, you know, if we try to look, you know, beyond the rhetoric and beyond the headlines, what are the core issues at the centre of all this?
Well, I'm not sure that there is a scandal in the actual pension scheme element of this. And I mean, look at the odd situation of having some sympathy for Philip Green in all of this. Because I think the investigation is throwing up a lot of concerns about the way he ran BHS, maybe. The fact that he took so much money out of the scheme, out of the company, shortly after he bought it, when maybe that would have been better invested in the business. But then, I mean, a lot of high street retailers have had troubles in the last 10 years. You know, several have gone bust, like Woolies, and a lot are struggling. But what I think certainly isn't Green's fault is the pension deficit. If you look at, there's some very, very well-run stores, like John Lewis has got a pension deficit of more than £1 billion. It's not caused by the employers, it's caused by the discount rates that are used. So I don't know whether holding him responsible for this £571 million deficit now is all that reasonable.
I think that's fair. And you know, also, I think that Sir Philip Green's taken an awful lot of flack for this, but actually, as the investigation has moved on, one thing that has emerged is that actually perhaps some of the blame for what has gone on might sit at Dominic Chappelle's door. But I think you're right that actually the issue of the pension scheme is one that we're seeing, you know, in DB schemes across the country, which is out of control deficits that are unmanageable. And I mean, Jenna, I don't know what you think, but it does raise the question, is the DB model sustainable? And if it's not, what are we going to do about all of these pension schemes that have unmanageable deficits? Do they all end up in the PPF? Do we look at new ways to deal with them? Like, where are we at on that?
I think, obviously, we do have the fallback of the PPF, which is fantastic. And it's not going to leave pensioners with nothing, should their scheme not be able to provide when it comes down to it. I think increasingly schemes need to look at de-risking sooner rather than later, and I think it's not a case of being fully funded or almost fully funded before you think about things such as buyouts. I think there are steps that can be taken along the way to try and ensure that you don't end up with such a large deficit, or indeed you can reduce it down as much as possible.
But de-risking it is incredibly expensive, and it's potentially just locking in the incredibly high deficits that we're seeing at the moment. I mean, the £571 million deficit that we're talking about for BHS is actually a £250 million deficit on a PPF basis. And I know Philip Green said when he appeared before the committee that he was working on a solution which would get the pensioners better benefits than they would have in the PPF. And from what the trustees have said, that would involve him kind of stumping up maybe 100 million, maybe a little bit more. So when you're looking at that kind of basis, I mean, that's the kind of the deficit we're looking at here. Rather than a £60 million deficit, we're looking at maybe a £200 million deficit. So it's possibly it's the way that we're accounting for these deficits that is the problem. So I mean, until the deficit gets crystallised by or in this case by an insolvency.
I think that makes sense. But I think Jenna's got a point here, because I think the way we have to look at it is fundamentally with a big DB scheme, with a big DB deficit, one of, I guess, four things can happen. One is that they can end up with an insurer, great. Well, I guess three things can happen. They end up with an insurer, they end up self-sufficient, or they go bust and they end up in the PPF. So there's, if we can find a way to perhaps relax some of the rules or make it easier for schemes, or talk about what schemes can do to put themselves along that insurance journey and find ways to make themselves more palatable to insurers, that's certainly like an interesting outcome that we should be looking at. That's the ideal, that's the dream. And then you've got what you're sort of talking about, which is, you know, in the event that it does go bust, or that the scheme, you know, never will pay off its pension scheme, how do we look at that deficit, how do we account for it, and how do we deal with it then? Is that sort of what we're saying?
To a degree, but I think also it's how we talk about deficits and how we account for deficits with schemes that are open and schemes that are running. But also that we need to look at how we actually account for deficits of open schemes as well. Talking about deficits on a buyout basis or even on an accounting basis gives, I think, an artificial idea of what the actual deficits are, and I think it's partly responsible for the closure of a lot of DB schemes. You know, they've got this huge liability sitting on the balance sheet there, which is not necessarily reflective of how much money they're actually going to have to put into the scheme to pay all the benefits they have promised.
So by accounting on a sort of worst case scenario basis, we're making the picture actually look a lot worse than it is, which can put people off DB in the first place, essentially.
Yes. So we're talking about closing the stable door after all of us have bolted here.
Okay. Yeah, and I mean, it's an interesting one, because I know we're here to talk about BHS, but obviously BHS is not the only big scheme that's in trouble that's in the news at the moment. And in fact, actually, in some ways, it's an interesting time to be in pensions, because I don't think I can remember a time, certainly in my lifetime, where pensions so dominated the headlines of the business news and the broadcast media and the radio. I mean, you can't move for pension stories at the moment. And one of the other big ones is Tata Steel. And, you know, it's hard to have a conversation about BHS without having a bit of a conversation about Tata Steel, because both of them are kind of, for very different reasons, archetypal examples of schemes where, you know, for whatever reason, the employer can no longer deal with them. And they both throw up interesting questions. So the interesting thing about Tata Steel is that the trustees have put up this proposal. You know, Tata Steel has said it can no longer afford its pensions deficit, and you know, there are questions about whether or not it's going to pull out of the UK altogether, whether or not the business can be sold. In some respects, there's a lot of government intervention here, and the reason there's a lot of government intervention doesn't have a great deal to do with the pension scheme. It has a great deal to do with the steel industry. But the interesting questions it does throw up is, you know, fundamentally, if the PPF is a last resort, should we be looking at and potentially trying to explore different ways that members might get, you know, that we might be able to keep schemes out of the PPF and members might get better results, better income, you know, might end up, because there's caps in the PPF and there's etc.
Absolutely, and I think if you ask any trustee, their ultimate aim is to give their members the best possible outcome, and the PPF isn't that, the PPF is a last resort. So I think at the very least, having these kind of big headline stories in the national media is making our industry think a lot more about the steps that can be taken to help these stress schemes sooner rather than later. So obviously it's not great for Tata Steel and BHS, but it's definitely in the long run going to be a good thing for the other DB schemes that are out there.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think it's important that we have these sorts of debates. You know, whether or not Frank Field's investigation will yield anything, I mean, it's not entirely clear to me what the ideal outcome of that is. He's talked about a potential pensions bill, but I don't know whether or not he's really in a position to get another pensions bill, you know.
So he's not, right? but he can apply pressure or, you know, make enough noise to get something inserted in the current pensions bill that's going through the House. But I don't think they've worked out what they want that something to be yet.
No.
The rumour is that they want trustees to be given more power to exercise these kind of rights. So to do things like in the British Steel scheme, they're talking about reducing pension increases.
Yeah.
Or possibly that they're talking about maybe setting up a new scheme and transferring everyone into a new scheme with kind of a lower structure of benefits. How many trustees would like that responsibility? I'm not sure. It would put a hell of a lot of responsibility on trustees. But I think, I mean, that they are probably the few people maybe left who could be trusted to exercise those kind of rights. I mean, I don't think many people would trust the financial services industry in general to make that decision, or maybe even their employers if they're talking about reducing benefits.
Yeah, that makes sense. I guess one of the questions, or one of my questions, would be, are the trustees have a lot of responsibility on them already? Would they want that extra responsibility? One of the things that I've heard some industry commentators, I think David Furze at KPMG is one for sure, say is, could we have some system whereby if the trustees and the employer are in agreement that by changing the pension scheme benefits or increasing or increases over time or whatever it might be, they could go to some sort of court and make the case for that, and then it could be decided that way. It might give it that extra level of sort of independence and protection to the for the trustees, which I think is an interesting idea.
Yeah. I mean, also, the problem that this does throw up is if companies have to basically say, we can't afford to pay our pensions, or we can't afford to meet our promises. So if you don't do this, we'll go bust, which is kind of the only way you can make it palatable for trustees. It sends quite a powerful and negative signal to any other creditors out there. So a lot of companies probably wouldn't be keen to publicly be seen to be reducing their pensions because they can't afford to pay them. It says we're in difficulty.
Yeah, and I guess there's perhaps some interesting lessons from over in the US as well. I mean, one of the things that they've seen happen a little bit with, you know, their PPF equivalent is that it's become a much more it's become a bit politicised, and it's also become almost a corporate restructuring tool in a sense, you know, like that it's kind of lost that independence. And I guess there is a concern that if we start travelling down that path in the UK, there's a chance that businesses see, you know, saying otherwise you'll go into the PPF and therefore trying to get trustees on board to reduce benefits as, you know, a way of helpfully restructuring their benefits out. And
Yeah, well, that's interesting. In the US, they've introduced legislation along the lines we're talking about, actually maybe introducing in the wake of VHS and British Steel, that will allow schemes in extreme circumstances to start cutting benefits. And they've got a much more extreme version, actually, which will allow schemes to cut pension in payment.
Yeah.
And that's being tested at the moment. I forget the name of the scheme, and it's one of the Teamsters unions are actually in the process of doing that, so it'd be interesting to see how they go about it and what kind of response they get, because I assume it will go down very badly with members.
Yeah, and I mean, there's the other issue I think that has had some focus in all of this, but perhaps not enough, is, you know, from the PPF's perspective, if a lot of these schemes end up in the PPF, if there's nothing else that can be done, do you get a weird situation where, you know, the good schemes can end up being liable for the bad ones? So the more people that capitulate into the PPF, the less people there are paying PPF levy. And obviously the few schemes that have managed to either invest their way out of trouble or you know, have gone down a de-risking path and are halfway there and about to buy out, and all of those schemes are going to end up, you know, paying an awful lot of money for the schemes that can't get that. I mean, I don't know, and it's not clear to me. I know the PPF has a really long-term view of how long its assets need to last, but I don't know at what point too many schemes default. Like, is there a point at which the PPF ends up in real, real trouble?
It's certainly an issue. And the PPF self-sufficiency model does kind of, it works that in, that they will have fewer and fewer people paying their levies, and they will rely more and more on their investment returns and on their kind of very low-risk strategy. But I think also an interesting point to note as well is in the British Steel Pension Scheme trustees' response to the government consultation on what they can do. They point out that if their scheme entered the PPF, it will probably actually have a positive impact on their funding levels because of the different ways that the deficits are accounted for in the PPF and in private sector schemes. So it's not necessarily the case that the PPF will take a hit. You know, sometimes they will take on a scheme and actually, you know, their funding level will improve as a result. So it's not necessarily the case that every scheme entering the PPF will result in high levies for those schemes that remain.
Sure. I mean, yeah, I've not seen a response to that from the PPF, but I'm not sure whether or not they would think of ending up with the BHS scheme as being a good... Tata Steel scheme as being a good thing for them. But leaving that aside for a minute, there's a lot of issues here, and, you know, thinking about our trustee audience a little bit, I mean, if you're a trustee of a scheme and it's a stress scheme, like, what do you do? What are the options out there? What should they be thinking about? I mean, obviously, there's a point of no return, and there's, you know, as Alan Rubinstein at the PPF has said a number of times, you know, there's that rump of schemes that will never make it, but there's also the grey area. There's healthy schemes, there's the rump that are probably never going to be okay, and, you know, both of these cases raise big issues about what happens to them, but there's also those sort of schemes somewhere in the middle that are at risk, but not completely in the danger zone yet. Are there things that trustees should be thinking about at this point?
Well, I mean, the obvious thing is to talk to your sponsors as much as possible and engage as early as possible so that you can see the anything you can do to improve the security of your scheme, maybe that wouldn't involve taking more money out of the sponsor. I mean, there are things you can do to reduce liabilities. I noticed that as part of the solution that Philip Green is talking about for his scheme, it involves a trivial commutation exercise, so that kind of thing to manage liabilities. I mean, it, maybe it is just kind of tidying it around the edges, but it does all help.
I mean, I had an interesting chat with a insurer the other day, and they weren't, you know, they didn't want to talk about BHS directly, and there's an awful lot of people in those situations, but we did have a sort of chat about stress schemes more generally, and about, you know, moving away from CPI to RPI and things like that, whether there's other things that we could do to change the benefit structure for DB schemes to make them slightly more palatable for insurers, or indeed just to make them to get them out of trouble a little bit. And I mean, some of the things that were raised were things like spouses' pensions, enforcing specific retirement ages so that you know what you don't have the deferred member problems and you've got more certainty around the benefits, all of those sorts of things. Is there a worry that Tata Steel is making us look in too narrow? There's too much talk about RPI and CPI and there's not enough talk about other possible instruments that we could use to do it. Should we be having a wider chat about that, do you think?
Yes, I mean, first thing, we should be having a wider chat more generally, because I know the government consultation is very specifically looking at this case in isolation, which doesn't make a lot of sense, because like I say, there's a lot of schemes which might well find themselves in this situation. But yeah, there are lots of things that schemes can do to reshape their benefits to make them more attractive to insurers if they do get into that situation where they're looking at a PPF or trying to secure a buyout at above PPF benefits but below 100% of their benefits. But I don't know whether schemes should be looking at that kind of restructuring where it's not apparent that they are in very immediate danger of entering the PPF assessment period.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. So what have we covered off? We've talked a little bit about, you know, what's going on in the legislation at the moment. I think we've pretty much agreed that we should ignore, well, or not ignore, but from a pensions perspective, we should ignore most of the drama that's going on in the investigation. And when we're looking at pensions, I guess what we've the kind of conclusion I think we've come to is that actually, in the case of both Tata Steel and BHS, we're talking about a fairly common problem here, and the rest of it's just sort of window dressing. You know, Tata Steel is about the steel industry considerations, there's government intervention, BHS, there's attempted shootings and goodness knows what else. But fundamentally, when it comes down,
alleged attempted shootings.
But fundamentally, when it comes down to it, we've got an awful lot of schemes in the UK. There are DB promises that have been made. We don't know. There's not really as yet any way out of those promises, and we're not really sure that there should be. But there's a fundamental problem, I guess, with the whether or not there can be flexibility around benefits and what those might look like. I mean, do we really mind if these schemes end up in the PPF? Because in lots of these discussions, the assumption is ending up in the PPF is a bad thing. Mm. Is it such a bad thing?
Well, obviously, it's less good than having your benefits paid in full.
Sure.
You're not retired yet. Obviously, there is an element of that. Whether it's a sustainable model as well, I'm not sure. I mean, do we want the PPF to gradually just absorb all £2 trillion of liabilities? I don't think they want that. I don't think that would work.
No.
I think a solution may well come along just if there is a faster than expected increase in gilt yields, and then suddenly this looks like a much smaller problem.
Yep.
And, you know, you can get a handle on it by going for buyouts, by de-risking all your assets and running your schemes on a self-sufficient basis. I think it's kind of, like you say, the drama is throwing a spotlight on this, and it might give us a chance to actually look at what we could do. I mean, maybe in the BHS case, the TPR will find something in this kind of 71,000 pages of documents they're looking through. the smoking gun that proves that actually Philip Green, knowingly diddled the pension scheme. But if they don't, then it's kind of gives us a chance to look at this and maybe look at whether there are levers we could put in the hands of trustees that would allow them to control liabilities a little bit in extreme circumstances.
And I guess that's what it comes down to, isn't it? It's how do we... We've known there's a DB problem for a long time. Everybody in the pensions industry has known that there's a DB problem for a long, long time. But now everybody else does too. And so I guess fundamentally it's about what legislation changes might come out of this. As you say, what levers might be put into trustees' hands? Might we think about ways to make schemes more palatable to insurers? That sort of thing. I mean, what would you, in an ideal world, what would you say the best possible outcome, I mean, other than these schemes magically getting better, what would be the best possible outcome for all these things? What do we want to see happen? I mean, from my perspective, I think, and this, and I've been thinking about this for, like, with regards to Tata Steel for a while, my personal view is that, you know, when they started talking about changing the legislation and, you know, possibly allowing them to shift from CPI to, sorry, from RPI to CPI, and everyone went, oh, we'll never be able to draw the legislation tight enough that it just applies to Tata Steel. And there was a bit of my brain that went, so what? If the trustees are right, and it's interesting that it's the trustees in this case that have suggested this, if the trustees are right that this could provide better benefits for their members, brilliant. And if other schemes start thinking about ways in that situation, start thinking about different ways of managing it that may or may not end up in going to the PPF, but might somehow pay their members better benefits, I can only see that as being a good thing.
Yeah, and I think if there are ways that will allow trustees to keep schemes running that would otherwise be wound up or end up in the PPF, that would definitely be a good thing. And if that involves something like making indexation conditional again, so that trustees every year could look and say, can we afford an increase? Yes, this is what we can afford, we'll give that. I think that would be better, although it would be kind of stripping away the guarantee from defined benefit to a degree. I think most people would like the security that gives them. You know, it's not a guarantee, but it is a degree of security compared to defined contribution schemes, compared to the reduction that you get if your scheme ended up in the PPF. So I think that would go a long way, and I think trustees would be relatively comfortable exercising that. So obviously, I mean, in the past, all kind of long running schemes have had that responsibility in the past, and it's been replaced by kind of a cast iron guarantee in legislation. So I think a lot of people would like to see that rolled back.
Yeah, no, I think that's kind of in line with what I think. Jenna, I mean, what about you? What's the dream scenario? What's the best possible outcome if we got to decide? What happens next?
I think this is almost the nudge we needed, and if even a handful of schemes can learn from what they're proposing for Tata Steel, then that's only going to be a good thing. And like you mentioned before, for them not to narrow it down to just be relevant for Tata Steel, I think that's a better outcome as well. I think it needs to be relevant for other schemes, because otherwise, further down the line, there may well be other schemes that end up in this situation, and they're just going to have to look at legislation and the like all over again.
Absolutely. So I think that's probably all we've got time for. And to sum up, not so much a scandal as a common garden problem, but one that shines a light on, you know, and provides a nudge for us to think more widely about DB schemes, stress schemes, and what the future of those might be. And what we're hoping for from this is that we find a better way to protect members' benefits, which, you know, seems logical because that's obviously the right thing to do. So thank you very much for joining me. That's been Jack Jones, the editor of Pensions Insight and Engaged Investor, Jenna Gaddavi, the Insight editor of Pensions Insight and Engaged Investor, and me, Sarah Benwell, the digital editor of Pensions Insight and Engaged Investor. Thank you for listening.